Healthcare from that from Tobler. It is $5 billion consumer demand from 2020 and data to 2026. Members present are Representative Todd, Representative Lincoln, Representative Ashton Bestia, Representative Lopez, Representative Vance, and myself, Representative Silas, the chair. If the record reflects that we have a quorum to conduct business, please take this back to silence yourself once for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to thank Jamie Peter, the House Traveling Vice Secretary of America, and Doug Bridges for making the role of our staff in our committee today. Today, we will be having a third hearing on House Bill 27 by Representative Kopp, with the Village Public Safety Officer Grimes with public testimony. Due to time concerns, I will act as a witness and testify to the testimony to 2 minutes or less, and I will ask that testifiers sign up no later than 9:15 a.m. We have one amendment today that has been passed by a couple of the committee members. I forgot the bill sponsor. But I would entertain a motion to introduce.
I'm sure I will have another one. I've been here for 31. Now it's July 246 by the G.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Chuck, the House Representative, District 24. And with me, my committee member, Mr. Dan Kevin. Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for the staff for representing the outcome. Madam Chair, the amount in front of this is as a result of collaboration with the Department of Public Safety in response to their written comments on the earlier version of the bill and also talking with the grantees and grant grantees of the equalization program. Madam Chair, your recommendations that we agreed with and are contained in this amendment, some that we disagreed with, which we will hear about further, and then some that we there's a lack of understanding because the language in the bill was correctly left in out of turn on the ADSO regulation. So we'll follow up with the DS further on that, but I think we've really addressed some of the primary comments in this amendment. So I'm sure the document that we're referring to is this one, which is exactly parallel to the same as we walk through this other major series to look at the one of the papers. But it's pretty straightforward. So the first change where we begin addressing or building the amount that EPA's on strategy that we are re-putting back in the requirement to maintain the liability insurance policy. We had initially removed the grantee requirement to maintain this policy for a couple of reasons. One, it is the requirement of the state to work on public safety, but we were requiring the grantees to fund the liability policy. And that is not kind of mandate. We want to recognize that it's not a mandate. But in conversation with the grantees, they say that they feel like the price structure that they're getting is a bit boring, and it does make it easier for them to manage the part of that bargain with DPS. And they felt that DPS had worked very hard to make it a really horrible policy. So, rather than by firing further restitution, they didn't know that they were comfortable leaving that in the policy requirement for them to cover. So with that grant, I think we'll usually move that back in the bill. And I'm sorry, next point, page 727. This makes it clear that all sex offense convictions, whether or not it's under 1141 against person or any other aspect of the criminal law that's defined as a sexual offense, it would be a disqualifying conviction to allow someone to serve as a DPSO. So again, all this does is make it clear that there's an sex offense conviction, you are disqualified from serving as a Village Public Safety Officer. And further, it defines in statute words when it shows in statute where the sex offenses are defined for reference. And then dealing with other felonies, and some of the other felonies mentioned, the possession felonies that going on about possession of the city without seeming to rely on forensic. If you're about for the first time with our building, it's below a certain amount. It's a misdemeanor possession under first offense. So if someone has such an offense and it's a felony in the background, this would allow some discretion if it's been 3 years or more have passed. And departments of the city can some waiver. So DPS will have authority to review the grant of waiver if they look at that and they now need to be disqualified felony. This allows some discretion, but it's also more importantly, I think it allows local communities to be able to honor those people that they feel have the trust of the community and should serve in these communities, even if they didn't come out of a difficult background completely unscathed. They're able to serve. This will allow some discretion in that. So I think we've nuanced this, so we've taken care of what most of the concerns were on that. We look forward to having something to take in. Mr. Chairman, do you think that we can get this
thank you, Madam Chair. And this whole section of the qualifications reflects the attempt to create more flexibility for the community organizations. And bill recognizes our and have been fighting recognized crimes. And so in that the grantees that we're dealing with most of them are already contacted with the federal government for some kind of sophisticated programs. They bring in and they manage a great deal of federal money. And for most of them, this grant program is one of the smaller grant programs that they run. But as they told us, it is one of the grant programs with the greatest most strings attached to it, the most difficult to manage because of the impediments that are in the regulations. So, this is an attempt to give these local governments maximum flexibility in these qualification requirements are at mandates. Nobody is both. The statute doesn't say that the organization must hire somebody, it just says that they can consider somebody with these types of backgrounds.
Yes, Madam Chairman, and just what I think you have. I think that's a lot of the committee that we're talking about a program that serves areas of Alaska where there is no structural support to help that are otherwise pretty trooper or a police officer to serve. That we are looking at the federal police policy of the officer serving the Dallas area of the state. And recognizing that part of recruitment and retention, which is the very purpose of this bill, is that we provide as much control on the hire process to these local communities. When they identify people and they need to trust to serve on these positions, that we are not really thinking statute that will make that even harder to provide their public safety presence. It's very easy for us to send home safely in our beds in the city and moralize about how public safety should be provided in the communities where no trooper or safe police officer would ever serve. And so I just wanted to put that on the record that we need to recognize that some flexibility must be granted to improve public safety in rural Alaska. So the next amendment, Madam Chair. This is the same thing as what we just discussed. For the next subject, we're going to be the Department of Public Safety and this grant a waiver. This should be with grants of domestic violence. Madam Chair, what this bill does is it mirrors exactly the current Department of Public Safety EPSO regulation. There was some comment that you were changing the regulation. You want current regulation says that a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence is more than 10 years in the past. You can apply for a waiver, and you may not get it, but you need the waiver to get access to the criminal justice information system. We kept that exact same process in this bill. So the information to the contrary is incorrect. This is a continuation of current regulation. And then more. Next one. Madam Chair, Table 6 is DUI offenses. This is a drafting error. Again, a large deal trying to get that drafted done within a deadline. But then originally, the amount of DUIs that would still allow someone to be
Rather than a total number of 120, it
was recognized that that's actually closer to a total number of 136 hours of instruction that are actually provided. Rather than saying each block has to be 40 hours, that total number of hours would cover those three blocks. So this is in concert with the consensus. For the record, the instrument says that my apologies to the recording secretary. This was a comment that we just overlooked on the system being constituted powers and beneath this statute that one didn't exist in the original bill, but as we discussed in the last hearing, we made some changes to it, and the changes. I don't think better worked out by the discredit of separate powers and duties statute for the village public safety officers. In the current regulatory environment for the DSO, if you get hired before you do your training, since you see that there's lots more functions and duties that these folks do that is beyond law enforcement, there are things that they can be doing before they get the law enforcement training, and that currently occurs right now. And the current regulations provide a 24-month window where someone can get the economy of law enforcement training. And so this just recognizes that these powers and duties that we're showing you are when you are certified. So there can be this gap period between hire and your actual certification.
Chair, for the record, this is Tom Pipe. Just further comment on that. We are not changing this bill. The current interval time, which is 24 months, between the time someone is hired and the time they are certified as a village public safety officer, we're keeping the current regulatory framework. And again, just to explain, the DSO program and priorities are very structured rules and duties that a DSO can do. Search and rescue training, other university trauma technician training, the rural fire suppression training, and other community service duties. That keeps the police so very busy and recognizes that for various reasons there can be this interval time is critical, the 24-month time for certification between the time it takes to attend the academy and the availability of time slots for the academy. So, there was a criticism raised that if you can still be hired, it would be immediately doing felony investigations with no certification. This bill does not change that current interval of time, and it recognizes that that's the way the program works effectively, and that it takes 2 years to get trained and certified. Certainly, if there was a compromise, another certified law enforcement officer would be able to come alongside. We're not changing the law, and that's the key takeaway on this.
This next phase, page 1920, is a pretty simple change. For the record, this is Dan Carroll's staff from the top. And you can see we're changing line 2 of the paragraph C. The comment was that management of search and rescue functions is a very state function, and it's not local, municipal, or village function, and this was just not very intentional intrusion into state functions. So, working with the coordinators, they flew down the road and fully understood the comment coming from the department. And so, we with the word coordination, which really more accurately reflects the role that they perform. Search and rescue missions. Page 13, line 28, and line 29, after this comedy, we're deleting this reference to it. That's really what we're doing here. You can see it there in the lower digital setup there. And then this one's again, if you recall to our prior hearing on this
actually, the current statute talks about, as long as the definition of statute for rural areas, the current leadership of the Department of Public Safety used that term, they used the term buildings, and so in the bill drafting process, the term that we're going to go with, we went with village, which is reflected in the regulations, but it just kind of went in the future of places that were intentional.
So the land card is just dropped out for the record for further clarification for the committee. Those are that wide reforms we're talking about, the leaves of the EPSO, and what they may enforce. So the EPSO may enforce the criminal laws of the state or municipality. They may enforce the statutes or ordinances of the state, the municipality, or the village township laws of that nation. What we're doing here with B, as you can see, the really minor B, is the law of statute enforcing statutes or ordinances of the state or municipality. Township laws of violation, but we make it very clear. If the certified mail to EPSO is completed terminating in that field of grounds and enforcement, question of grounds and enforcement was raised by grounds enforcement by our urban association. Mr. Kelly, who is here, you understand this. There is basketball. Miles between various, I feel like, advocating organizations and having like some EPSOs who are trying to do traffic enforcement. They take them to the office and find new traffic control, but they have not been doing it because it's not been clear whether they could or not. So this says if you have the training in that field of violation enforcement, you can go ahead and enforce that particular violation.
This is the last change in the amendment. Adam Chambers again, and Ken Drive from Whitman staff will review the top. Received a request to grant duties, in this case to the definition of the village. This just provides more flexibility for the grantees and reflects potential demographic and population shifts that may occur within the region and not limiting them to 2,000. In order to qualify for being a grantee in this program.
So, Madam Chair, this is Joe Powell. That's the conclusion of the our explanation of changes to the amendment that is included in the committee.
Thank you. Any questions on the committee members or board members?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, can you just summarize the overall intent of these changes and where they originated from?
Yes, Attorney General Representative Ortiz, the overall intent of these changes is to more clearly identify the duties of the bill sponsor officer. The intent of the bill sponsor and the workgroup as a whole that these are professional public safety officers delivering professional public safety services in rural Alaska. More clearly and clarifying the intent of the grantees is operationally they're the ones that deploy this program and in concert with them and taking in consideration feedback from the Department of Public Safety, incorporating those suggestions into this, making it clearer at the moment with any subsequent conviction can be employees that are the sponsor in any following sense of that conviction. Making certain the program definitions are such that provides for the best balance of flexibility in prior recruitment retention as well as provided for the balance of teams.
Thank you very much for that. If I correct again, it's really that change to I guess it was being regulated by the Department of Commerce is more of a financial arrangement, but that with the change back to done makes it clear that DPS is still responsible for monitoring and for evaluating things like that. Is that the correct understanding?
Yes, for the chair, Representative Ortiz, so those sections are really
try to do patient to commerce on how to be with background investigation and making sure some of the minimum certification requirements to be qualified as a medical safety officer and keeping commerce in its proper place within the community oversight that we're up to the rights of oversight or DPS has the access to the criminal justice information system and the ability to verify criminal records and to do background investigations and interviews to make sure someone is otherwise qualified to do the job. So making sure each department is in its right seat because it will work together. And you also want to ensure that DPS is the operational partner for getting the terrain guiding and oversight of the program. Through the chair, Representative Vance, so the final hiring decision is a collaborative one. In other words, it starts with the person responding to a solicitation to do the job, and it's the hiring authority, which is the demanding organization. If they say, oh, we'd like to hire you, and the person submits their application, and that application to go through the background investigation process, which involves DPS, and if there is a hiccup in there, let's say there's a disqualifying offense, but it otherwise falls within its outside of the 10-year bar for domestic violence, or if maybe a drug possession offense that would disqualify, but it's for something that's a misdemeanor today where it was a felony and the person did it, there would be a DPS getting waiver, so this person can serve and access the criminal justice information system. So those administrative processes have to go through DPS to say whether or not someone could be qualified to serve. They're not actually making the hire. The hire is still the grantee, but the grantee wouldn't make the hire if they couldn't get the person otherwise qualified. So it's a collaborative process where working together they come to the result of whether or not the hire can go forward or not. Is there an opening for DPSOs to be able to make that path, or would they automatically be disqualified because some of these exemptions are in place that aren't allowed for troopers? Officers, I think it's your representatives have a tremendous amount of training. Many of them have completed the entire Cooper Academy, so I have a say in using law enforcement certification as well as the same tour. And so, where the difference becomes difference about whether or not they're employees, they're employees of the branch of the organization, so they're anxious to recruit and retain an issue. They're very underpaid and recognized for the work that they actually do. So, the bill, really is removing structural impediments to the also which words addressed in this amendment, but the bill places the ability to flexibility of the grantees to actually fund the services needed to support that DPSO and more flexibility managing the grant while hard to discourage engineers that seek to keep themselves from effectively serving in these rural areas is when they sense that something is permanently needed, like fuel for a four-wheeler or power sword, or the ability to go to a neighboring village and get something they're told to go that's outside of the grant. There's a lot of people in service to EPSOs that they don't want to be Cooper. They want to be an EPSO. And the villages and the villages they serve, they want to be EPSO. They're trying to get a Cooper in the community. They want to be EPSO supported. They heard that all around the world. The communities around the state now, they want us to take the program and make it stronger. It's a good example we have of local government building a local public safety service. In fact, the city of Homer is trying to help out the Homer Police Department. Which means
diagnosis or be good, that's why we're raising the opportunity for to complete the program as public safety services to the McDaniel program. And we're very engaged in having to improve the program and hope that we can continue to do that with the state to make that happen. We see this bill as a new path forward. It creates opportunity for our overall safety programs. And some of the things that we particularly like are the organization of the public safety services, of the communities that we're engaged with, where the community and the services that they need, providing flexibility for new programs as needed, and plus being able to get also creates an opportunity for tribal and other organizations to participate in the consultation process with the Department of the Department of Civil Training and Experience requirements. And of course, as we get to the government, we recognize the government relationship. And I thank Representative Paul for his leadership on putting forward the work of the Joint Working Committee. And I do thank you for this morning. I'm so glad so that I had to offer a vote and support for the bill without seeing the written versions. But I can say that we embrace the concept of the bill and we think it's in the right direction and look forward to helping it through the legislative process. So thank you, Christy Shawa.
Along with me this morning.
Thank you.
responsibility. Next, we have Joy Anderson with the Association of Village Council Presidents. So, if you could begin by putting yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, this is Joy Anderson. I'm calling to ask what you have for the direction of providing testimony to a lot of different ones.
I will go ahead and recognize Murphy Wayne Kessick with the Association of Village Council Presidents.
Good morning. This is Dr. Kessick. I'm a program administrator with oversight over the VPSO program and APCP Community Services Division. The VPSO program director is Alvin Jenny. APCP is a tribal consortium with 56 federally recognized groups as members of our organization. We are located in Southwest Alaska with 48 villages along the Kuskokwim and Incline Rivers and the Bering Sea Coast. Our service area is the same size as the state of Washington. There is a well-documented public safety crisis in rural Alaska. DVCP tribes have prioritized public safety as the number one priority. Public safety is a right of all Alaskans. There are many components of rural public safety. The DPSO program is one component, and it is one that works when the program is supported. Tribes in our region want DPSO. I know how effective it is to have a DPSO in their community. The DPSO Tribal Caucus made up of the 10 contractors have been working together to strengthen the DPSO program. We have created a strategic plan and vision for the program. ACCP wants to thank the Alaska DPSO Legislative Working Group for listening to our recommendations and taking to heart the needs of residents throughout Alaska. Village Public Safety Officer Grant reflects many of the concepts we support to strengthen the VPSO program and deliver the public safety services our community deserves. This group supports a collaborative working relationship between us, the people operating the program, and the villages in the state of Alaska. The tribal organizations in Alaska have decades of experience in operating successful social service as well as health programs and are experts in providing services in the rural and marginalized communities. We would like to help thank the House Tribal Affairs Committee, the VPSO Legislative Working Group, and the Tribal Caucus for their support of our Alaskan grant.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Next, we have Chelsea Wallace. Are you online?
I'm going to have a little bit of a Next, we have Representative Cobb for your presentation. Next, we have Joel Jackson with your organized religious take. Bring him on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you could begin by putting yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Right now,
position yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Paul Leo. I am testifying on behalf of Alaska Tribal Unity, which is a statewide advocacy organization for rights veterans. And the Alaska Tribal Unity supports this bill, House Bill 27.
Madam Chair, of the last meeting, and to the members of the committee, and also to thank the sponsor and Representative Trump Cobb. I'd like to acknowledge the Iroquois people and the Tarkuqua people of this area. For the record, my name is Malcolm and I own the Citizen Crow. I'm from Canada, I come from the community of Steve, Mama Pink. Alaska is here in the Southeast. I am the President and CEO of First Alaskans Institute, which is a statewide Alaska Native nonprofit organization. We are happy to also 1887. I want to recognize something that happened that is connected to this in my mind, and that is this legislative body passed the energy housing board just recently. I think that is a really significant and important recognition of something that was so impactful to recognize that the lives of our children are so precious to us. In my mind, this bill connects up to that recognition because it actually created a cleaner way for public safety and law enforcement to operate in rural and village Alaska. I think that if we look comprehensively as a state, the program has had its hands tied to be able to deliver public safety on behalf of the state of Alaska in full constraint. It's so bureaucratic, it's almost as if from inception the program was designed to fail. And I think personal contractors have been working extra hard, and as was mentioned earlier by the bill sponsor, really unrecognized for the work that they have to do against incredible odds, with very little funding, with all kinds of regulations that tie them up and bind them from being able to actually provide and offer meaningful and safe public safety and enforcement across the state. This was mentioned earlier by many of the other testifiers. Public safety is right in Austin's, and there is a duty and obligation to the state of Austin to provide that equitably. Is it possible for the state of Austin to do that, given the geographic constraints that we have here in the state, to really embrace Alaska and all of it, meaning all of rural Alaska and where our people live, and have lived for dozens of years? We have to be able to provide services in a way that makes sense for them on the ground. And something that I really appreciate about this bill is very technical amendment in nature, trying to create substantive things that the contractors can actually provide responsive and responsible services in their regions and in their communities through the VPSO program. I think one of the components that I appreciate about this bill and the way that it was created was that it was through a working group created by the legislature, which tells me that there were many people whose lives have been involved in trying to shape something that is workable. Is it perfect? Probably not. But it's better than what it has been, and that's what this is doing. This is actually giving this legislative body the opportunity to do something meaningful to change outcomes in public safety across the state. Without this bill, without these regulations, what do we have? Without implementation of these changes, what do we have? We've already heard over and over again the kind of crisis we're dealing with in public safety. And we've already heard from leaders and politicians about how important it is to change these things. This is the vehicle to do it. And so I want to make sure that this committee knows that Chris Wilson's Institute stands behind it. And I want to say to our VPSOs, our VPSO program coordinators, our VPSO grantees, and the contractors who have taken on this huge task, how grateful I am. As imperfect as it is, the story that I shared earlier of a bank there and what happened earlier, I want to tell you a little bit more about the bank. She's one of Alaska's most brilliant artists. Absolutely one of our most brilliant artists. And is an incredible mother, living in a beautiful place, a place that, like so many of our rural and village areas, actually defines what Alaska is about. But she did not get served by the public safety as it's currently constructed. These changes would make service better and blessed on the path toward equity and public safety and law enforcement. So, on behalf of Russell Austin, can we happily honor our support? Ms. Trisha, we have the opportunity to testify. And again, Representative Cobb, thank you for the bill.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Are there
Department of Labor and Individuals in the room who wish to testify at this time? Seeing no individuals wishing to testify, I'm going to close public testimony. The board would like to acknowledge and say this afternoon that we are welcoming Catherine Alfredo from the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Labor and Commerce for being available for questions today. Any other questions or comments at this time from committee members? Great. Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to approve this bill from committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor to move committee substitute for House Bill 287, /14866/G as amended from committee with inclusion recommendations that are attached to this note.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, committee substitute for House Bill 287 passes from committee. We will sign the committee documents at the conclusion of our committee today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 12th at 9 a.m. in Davis Room 106. So we'll start at 9 a.m. on Thursday. We will be having a hearing on HJR 29 relating to the Anti-Discrimination Act of 1945 with invited testimony. The time is 9:14 a.m. and this hearing of the House Tribal Affairs Committee is now adjourned.